Hello everyone, this is the Red News Fanzine Podcast. Thank you all for listening, and thank you all for buying the mag. And if you don't buy the mag, buy the mag. But if you want to support us a little bit more, we also have a Patreon that you can sign up to, and it's patreon.com/rednews. Now, here's the podcast. Goodbye.
Hello everyone, happy new tears. Red News Podcast 291, an emergency one. I don't know how many times we've done one of these before. We've done this rodeo before. Never in January the 5th. I'm not a fan of January. So I've come through where a manager has been sacked for shagging the physio's missus. So nothing should surprise me at United anymore. Deal with what I do know. Lad, I trust at United, said this all started. So 2 months ago today, I was at Carrington and the mood was really good. So it started to unravel before Christmas. I'm sure a lot more is going to be brief from United. Ruben's in that unsatisfactory position where he hasn't walked. So he's got an NDA, so he won't be able to say much. They're now leaking about how explosive he got. All I've heard from a lad I trust is he's properly seen his arse. Now, whether that's about being told he can't have another signing, whether he's got the hump about them interjecting about a style of play, we will surely find out. But he's properly seen his arse and stopped about it. Whether that's right or wrong, I feel a mixture of emotions. I do feel sad again, but I'm becoming immune to it, so I'm not as sad as all the others because we've just done it so many times. I feel relieved, selfishly, because I'm that Luddite United fan who wants to have a bit of joy. And if you listen to the last pod, I went back, just joyless, and that's expressed by a few people. It is a bit mixed out there, and some people believe he was building to something, and you have to see it out. I personally, you look at his record, and there have, you know, we'll argue all season, no doubt, about the improvements. I don't think they were enough, and the record looks bad. And it's... the one thing I agree with, I've got serious worries. So I'm no supporter of the suits. Oh, you know, they've done the right thing. This is ad hoc. And said to Nathan earlier, they haven't sacked him, me and Coggy and Nathan was, they haven't sacked him because of the fans. They haven't sacked him as much for results. They've sacked him because he's seen his arse with them and he's called him out in public. And it's the first time probably we've become a modern club that someone's gone because they've clashed with the director of football. So the suits have chosen. Ineos cocked up Ten Hag, they've cocked up this in a way, you know, so I've got no trust in them. But one thing I do agree with in their statement was it will get us more points. And the fundamental, I really did think, and I've been saying this for a couple of weeks, I thought we were going to start sliding as of now, and we were going to slide quite badly. Wembenyama comes back, you know, next week too, I just thought Arsenal to come, City to come, I just had a bad feeling that a man who hasn't won us one more game was becoming, you know, like too impractical with his subs. There was just too much going on before all this. So I think I still think we'll get six. I still think we will get more points, but it's unedifying. It doesn't look good. And what goes back to the very first pod when we talked, you know, Nathan suggested, why, if we want a United way, why are they bringing in a man with his own way? It all looks fairly illogical. And does it give you faith in the next thing? Well, Phil Jones, I came across an interview he did talking about Ralf Rangnick on the BBC, and he said it was really weird. An interim manager came in temporarily. He was in charge, but it didn't feel like it to the players. We didn't see who he really was, and there wasn't a trust. Training was just not engaging, he said. I don't think interim managers work at United. So it concerns me, not the Fletcher bit, not the immediate bounce, but I don't want Maresco until the end of the season. So they've got to, going back, they've got to tread very, very carefully. But January the 5th, Monday, when everyone's back to work, is not the fucking day where I want to spend 12 hours fretting about Manchester United. Now, I don't know what everyone else is going to say. We've also got a few add-ons to add on after that, thanks to readers to get involved. I'm going to speak Barge's part, but we've got Peter, Steve and Ben to add their voice audios on. But we've got Nathan, Nick, Shane, Ben and Coggy, and I'm going to go to Nathan first. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I really don't really know what to I know that it's not a good thing to say when you're doing a podcast, but I don't really know what to say, to be honest. I think, obviously, something's happened, hasn't it? Like, I think it's safe to say, because, like, you know, if we're going off performance, they've not sacked him on performances, have they? I think before the ball was kicked in the season, we said we were looking at, like, sixth, weren't we? Like, we were hoping, you know, if things were really good, we'd hopefully get Champions League, but if we get in Europe, and we're on target for that, and, you know, and I know that it's been very frustrating, you know, we've drawn in games or lost in games that we should have won, but we're still there or thereabouts. But like you've said, it's also been dull. Like, I've actively chosen not to go to the last two home games, do you know what I mean? Like obviously Boxing Day couldn't go, but the game after that, I wasn't that bothered about going. So obviously that says something as well, doesn't it? But I don't know. I think reluctantly is that the word that they used in the statement? Reluctantly, it is the right. You know, something's happened. He's, like you say, he's either seen his ass, or, you know, he's stood up for what he. We know that he's a very, very stubborn person. You know, we've seen that with his formations and all that, and he wouldn't let anyone else challenging him on that, and, you know, he's clearly tried standing up for whatever he's been trying to stand up for, and the club have not been happy about it. And it's like, well, in a way, it's like, I sort of respect him for that, I guess, like, in a weird way, do you know what I mean? Like, he's got his way that he wants to do things, which the club will have known about when they signed him. Do you know, everyone knew that he wanted to do things in a certain way, and the club have gone along with it. So it's like, we'll probably mention the fact that the club need questioning on this. You know, like, why would you bring in a manager who you don't think will fit, like, the ethos? You know, you've not changed the youth teams to play in a similar way. There's no forward thinking in terms of progression that way, so they obviously didn't back it that much. They brought him in mid-season when he didn't want to come in. You know, like, there's talk that he didn't want the certain signings that we've made in terms, you know, like with Sesko and Lammens, and he wanted other people and stuff. So it's like, you know, it was always going to end badly, but when you look at it, and that's taken out of, that's not even considering the performances. Do you know, it's always felt like, yeah, you know, and I know it's very easy to say in hindsight, because I would have carried on until the end of the season and then gone from there and thought, is it working, is it not? But obviously something has broke the camel's back, hasn't it, in the last few weeks, and he's definitely got that fire of, like, a Jose, hasn't he?
Yeah.
When it comes to stuff like that. But then that's the thing, it's clearly come out of nowhere, because there is no forward planning. Like, we spoke about this last week in one of the groups, and I think it was Steve who said, would you let him go if someone was better? And it was like, well, obviously, if someone was available who's better, who we know is going to be better, then obviously I'm going to say, yeah, let's do it. But that's not even the case, is it? You know, it's going back round in circles of the caretaker, blah blah blah, and it clearly wasn't on the cards, which again is a damning indictment to the club, I think.
Yeah, I think it's better now than letting this drift. It is that Jose, you know, where it gets spiteful, you know, and the thing that I we'll find out more, the Semenya and all that. I don't think the Dorgu signing, if that was his, gave me enough confidence to then say, well, if we haven't got a plan A, I prefer, if they are sticking to a structure with my doubts on Ineos, that you go, God, we don't give him a right to play players that someone else is going to be left with.
Well, that's the one thing I've said. It feels like if they've learned anything, it's not to go all in on a manager and his signings, because, you know, how long we've taken to struggle with the signings that Ten Hag made, you know, like, so there is that. But yeah, I just think, I'm just, like you're saying about wanting more points, we're not guaranteed, you know, we're there or thereabouts in terms of where we thought we were going to be. That's not a guarantee, it wasn't a guarantee with him, but I'd be worried that we're just as likely to drop off with all this than we are to kick on noticeably better.
Mm-hmm. Nick?
I need to move my microphone a little closer because I think this is going to die on me. So basically, Barney, what you're saying is you go to Carrington and it all goes pear-shaped, is that?
Yeah, basically, the good news from all this is the goalkeeping coach can finally have his hip up. So the very fixed metaphor for the Amarin's time is we've got a goalie coach who waddles onto the pitch with a dodgy hip. So at least there's some brightness that the poor sod can go and get his bloody hip fixed. Go on, Nick.
Well, to be honest, I'm more sad about you, Barney, because, you know, you finally got a manager's name you can pronounce correctly in Amarin. You've been working on that for so long, and you get it right, and then you get sacked. And you got your first mispronunciation of Maresca in there nice and early, which was good to see. I did see Nicky Butt say that he's going to give up his season ticket if Maresca comes in because he's an ex-City connection or whatever it is. Thinking before, it's like, wait until he finds out about some apples tree. Your other quote, the last podcast was joyless. Over to you, Nathan. Like, well, they're not words that people usually say as well. Like, sorry, Nathan. I think most people are probably expecting that I'm going to come out with like some sort of big, I was right, I've had like loads of messages and all this, but I take genuinely no satisfaction in it. I'm genuinely good, it's not worked out. You know, I've said before, I don't think it's great when your club's sacking a manager. I don't take no pleasure in seeing United being bad. It's just, I didn't think this was going to work. I was maybe starting to come around on it. I don't think it's particularly difficult to predict a United manager to struggle anymore. You know, all these managers that we're going to have are hired to be fired. And as I've said before, this club is cursed. And this is what it is. We're victims of our own demise sometimes. I actually didn't think the performance yesterday was
no,
bad.
That gets lost in it, yeah.
It does, and you know, in some ways it was a really solid point with what he had available, and nobody was pissed off leaving the ground yesterday. No. Everyone was in pretty buoyant mood, people were singing and chanting, they were pretty happy with a point. Okay, maybe could have argued with a better side and could have gone on and won it. But, you know, I do think that after the post-match press conference, you know, you texted last night, Barney, and I was like, well, kind of a bit of a dead man walking now. It's more a question of a question of when than if he's going to get sacked. And, you know, obviously there's been disagreements in their pursuits of transfers, formations, whatever it is. But it is something that's as tenuous as, you know, not being able to get Semenyo. Then Ruben still needs to look at himself and not qualifying for the Champions League and not making us a more appealing destination. He's accountable for that. And that money shouldn't just be spent without a plan on anybody. As you said before, see Dorgan. You know, whether that's him or not, just because you've got money there means that you need to spend it. We need to learn from that. So that is one thing that I will commend the suits for if they're going to try and operate something like that going forward. I mean, that statement was just really bizarre this morning. I mean, it was funny to see him call him a head coach and make that clear in the start. It made me chuckle. And obviously saying that it was reluctant shows that there is no formal plan. And it's just kind of, well, who can we get in? We'll just get Darren Fletcher on the phone because, you know, he's available and he's here. You know, they always wanted to get their version of events over in a shorter summary, but I just couldn't see how this was going to work out. You know, going back to the start of it, you know, he's a young, inexperienced manager. He's had one real proper job for a certain period of time in a smaller league, taking over the world's biggest club. And people just get blindsided, don't they, over stuff, and they want things to be better than what they are. I mentioned this, and not to keep going back to Cunha like Graham Souness with Pogba, but people want people to be better than they are. It doesn't mean that they actually are. Look at what you can see and what results are and how people are producing, judge it off that. Because he's wearing nice tracksuit tops and chinos and got a nice beard, you know, he's always got away with it. It was never United, and it almost didn't feel like it was about United. It was about, look at this cool, suave man that we're getting in. I didn't really like the start when he came in and he said it's going to be worse before it'll get better nonsense. That was a massive red flag at the start. You know, I think he's not a revolutionary for saying that. It's more self-preservation when he knew he wasn't going to be up to the job or knew that he wasn't ready for the job. And if you look at the highs and lows, I thought there were some pretty good highs in there. I mean, City away was pretty big with the Amad goals. Scouse Bastards away was fabulous. That Maguire goal was brilliant. And to be fair,
Leon home. Leon Hines.
Leon Hines was probably the best game of football I've ever been at. I enjoyed it that much. It was just fantastic. And but the lows were just, they were just so bad. I mean, the lowest of the lows, that Ruben Amorim song, I'm glad we'll never hear that again. The Newcastle at home game, Dempsey gets hauled off after about 4 seconds. You know, and you'd only been in charge for, what, not even a month at that point as well. Bilbao, I mean, I'll never forgive him for that. His stubbornness cost that game all day long. You're not throwing on Garnacho early, it was ridiculous. He played Spurs 3 times that season, fourth if you include this one. He still couldn't figure out that team and that place, and still hasn't managed to beat them when everyone else in the league was absolutely smashing through them last year. He just doesn't learn from these mistakes, and it was same shit, different day. And that's what it, that's what's ultimately cost him the job, really. So, Grimsby, obviously that's, it should go out without saying, you know, his tactic boards in the rain. I mean, as I said before, we were 2-0 down when that happened, and he got it back to 2-2, but he's still a League Two team. You don't really get much credit for that.
And, and also, Nick, the post-match conference was, there were a few odd ones. I mean, the one after Grimsby was like, where we thought he was just basically doing a Jose and calling the players out. Is, I mean, like, it's mad that he survived another 3 months after that, really. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, to be fair, we were saying after Bilbao, we all got criticised for it because, you know, me and Riaz after the game, like, he's got to go. It's inexcusable. You just, you shouldn't be losing that game, you know, and everyone was looking at us like we were idiots. So I was like, no, he's got to go. It's going to all end in tears. Let's cut the cord now. I don't trust him with the money in the summer, you know, and all right, okay, maybe I was a little wrong on that with some of the signings that have come in. But I feel like over the last 4 or 5 weeks, I genuinely feel like I've actually been warm into him. You know, you look at the league, over the last 14 games we've played, we've only lost 2 of them. I know there's been a lot of draws in there, and yeah, that Everton at home game was really bad, but the other loss was at the other away, and they're flying, and I kind of feel like we have been building some momentum, and even over this Christmas period where it's been congested fixtures, he has had his 3 best attackers out. You know, he's been missing Bruno, he's been missing Ahmad, and missing Mbeumo, and we are going to struggle with that. It's just, I want someone who's going to come in next really to carry on with that proven Premiership players. And I think that what we need to do next is get a Premiership proven manager. That's got to be the next goal, really, for me.
The good, well, we'll come to the who next after the Ben, Shane and Coggy's spoken. The good thing is, and we said this, and this is if it goes to Ineos, the good part is that signing Premier League players has helped us, and they're going to be ready for the next man. We're not going to be floundering with, you know, out of the last 5 or 6 signings, 4 or 5 look equipped and ready to go. I did laugh at the dark cloud behind the corner flag in United's Twitter thing, as if like, let's find a somber picture where we can put the obligatory corner flag comes out when an announcement is made. And I was, when I heard the news, I was on the toilet, and then I stayed on there messaging and tweeting for so long I actually got cramp as I got up. I thought, was that another metaphor? Hello, Ben.
Hello. Yeah. So Ben, before you start, right, hygienically, Barney,
yeah,
you take your mobile phone, well, and use your mobile phone while you're sat on the toilet.
I'm already riddled, Coggy, so, you know, like, I'm a broken man anyway, so what's more breakages?
Yeah, but your wife or Albert could actually pick your phone up after that. It's just,
All right, let's not get the rubber gloves out now. Right, Ben?
Get some wet wipes.
He licks it clean when it comes out, Coggy.
Oh, for God's sake. Jesus Christ. Come on, back to script.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what's been said. I think I was surprised this morning, even though, you know, in spite of the comments yesterday, which were obviously quite incendiary, and you sort of thinking, you know, he's lit the fuse here, and at some point this is the beginning of, but I didn't expect it to happen as quickly as it did. But like you said, I'm kind of numb to it now, really. It's not like when Moyes was sacked, it was like a big deal, wasn't it? Like the first, you know, for a lot of us, the first time United sacked a manager in our lifetime. And you know, that just become immune to it almost. I would say, personally, I didn't want him gone. I was still, whilst I had a lot of doubts about him, I wasn't, you know, entirely convinced. And there's been lots of things that Nick's gone through a lot of already. You know, the formation being the biggest, but I think with some of the previous ones, at the point of them being sacked, sort of Jose, Ten Hag, and even Ole, I was ready for them to be sacked at that point. Whereas I don't think I was quite there yet with Amorim. I would personally give him till the end of the season. but obviously it's kicked off in the background, hasn't it, as you've said, around whatever that might be. And I suppose that happens in every walk of life, doesn't it, when relationships break down like that, and then it comes to a point where someone's position is untenable. And once you get to that point, it's probably best to act quickly and just bring it to an end. But as yeah, I mean, I said I didn't like the system. I've written down here in block capitals Everton. I think that, you know, that was almost a sackable offence in itself. The complete inflexibility in that particular game just summed the whole thing up, really. When you're chasing a game at home against 10 men and you leave all those defenders on, I think that was, you know, that inflexibility is probably how you would ultimately sum it up, I think. Nathan said something about, you know, it's not the result, not the performances. I think I disagree with that slightly. I think results wise yeah, it's not, you know, we're not in a bad position, and we all said at the start of the season probably that the target is likely to be sort of 5th, 6th European football, and we're still in and around that. I think that's maybe a slightly false position, you know, on the basis of how bad and inconsistent everybody else has been. But I think the performances haven't been great by and large. You know, there's a couple that stand out. Villa was actually a quite a good performance, even though we lost. Bournemouth at times, we played some really good football. But there's also been some really, really turgid, dreadful games in the last 6 weeks in particular. Well, you know, throughout his tenure, really. But, you know, thinking about Wolves, West Ham, Everton, there have been some dreadful performances recently. And one thing I agree with Nick on is that comment around, you know, when he said it's worse, going to get worse before it gets better. I agree that was a red flag, and I think a lot of people, you know, said that at the time, that, you know, it was a strange thing to say, and there's been, you know, a lot of those as well. In terms of the sort of caretaker or whatever you want to call it, I mean, again, completely agree that putting somebody like Ranić, whoever that might be, in charge until the end of the season, that just fills me with dread. I think if you're not going to be able to make an appointment now, then I'll just stick with Fletcher until the end of the season, and hopefully you'll get a bit of a bounce off that. But, you know, putting somebody in from outside of the club who's only going to be there on a on a short-term contract doesn't make any sense to me at all. And in terms of the replacement, we can come on to that. But again, completely agree with Nick that I think it's really important to go for someone who's got Premier League experience now. I think that's worked quite well in the recruitment of players. Obviously, Šeško being the exception there. But I think it's really important that we're not bringing somebody else in who's done well in an inferior league, but he's having to basically learn on the job. I don't think we can afford that. So it's got to be someone who's proven to some degree in the Premier League.
I just think the whole, you know, we're a batshit crazy club with batshit crazy things. You know, the gimps, the way we're treated, the whole midweeks that have been going on, you know, the sanctions. So there's so many things. So but I always gave him the free pass. Our last season, we start from this season. But even this season, he had the weeks off, you know. This was going to be where it all kicked on. And even being better, we've only won 8 games in 5 months. You know, like,
also,
it's 8 out of 20. So whether if that's the improvement, and you just... Yeah, maybe I'm putting the deflectors on because the manager's gone, so I just move on, you know, mentally in my head. But I just don't think, even knowing he's kicked off against the very suits that we fight against, but you do that in public, there's just not a million years. You know, Fergie did it with Edwards. Fergie did it a couple of times, and he almost went on the brink. And there's a manager who'd already won us all, you know, that the hearts had ever dreamed of. You just can't do it.
I think if you look at his statistics, on almost every metric you look at, he's the worst, you know, the worst post-Ferguson manager by far, you know, on so many different metrics. You know, and you know, you're saying he's improved. There has been some improvement on last season, but don't forget it was him that took us to those lows, you know, that we never thought possible of sort of 15, 16. We're probably round about back where we were when we sacked Ten Hag now, you know, in around 6, 7. So if he's improved us, he's kind of got us back to the mediocre position we were in when he arrived.
Nick's doing there. Sorry, then. But in a perverse way, I'm almost, you know, like glad for once United are being a bit more clinical and not letting us meander a sorry dance that just... goes. Right, hello Coggy, sorry Ben, and we'll get on to...
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing has been a complete shit show, hasn't it? I mean, you know, going back to his appointments, you know, we paid Newcastle some compensation, waited 6 months for Ashworth because, apparently he was best in class as sporting director or director of football. He didn't want Amorim as the manager, so Ratcliffe went above him and said, yeah, he's going to be the guy. And then Ashworth resigned.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you start off, if that's your starting point, then, you know very well it's going to end in tears, basically. But once you've made that decision, you've got to stick by the guy and you've got to give him 2 years, 3 years. And I can see the reason why he's being sacked and everything. But it's not because of the results, is it? Because if it had been because of the results, it probably would have been after the Bilbao game. It's because he's had the audacity to speak up against Wilcoxon. I mean, what has Wilcox done in his career? You know, he was an academy manager at City. I think he spent a year at Southampton. And now all of a sudden, he's the director of football of one of the biggest football clubs in the world. I mean, and he's the guy making all the decisions. It's just a complete shit show as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, today was no surprise. But
yeah, I don't have the confidence, you know, like, I just think, I don't know, like, how long are we in this matter?
Listen, I honestly believe it doesn't matter who comes in next time, right? They're working to the same system that Amorim was working to regarding the back, you know, the background and everything. And one step out of line and you're on your bike. And I just think that, you know, I cannot envisage any improvements, whoever we bring in.
Well, they want a yes man, won't they? And then that, we know where that leads to. That's waistcoats, I think. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that, but I think they'll go for someone, or you know, maybe the Glasner thing, but I think they'll go for someone who will toe the line, you know, won't be controversial.
My understanding of a director of football is he sits down with the football people in the club, which obviously includes the manager. You decide on a style of play, and obviously the club decided 3-4-3 was going forward, which actually can be very exciting if it's done properly with the right players. And then the manager says, these are the positions that we need to fill. This is the type of player I'm looking for. And then they go out and find those type of players. So in theory, it should work well. So I just don't know where it's broken down. I don't know who signed Dorgo. I don't know whose decision Sesko was. You know, whose decision it was to keep Bruno at the club. You know, it just, everything just seems completely, well, as I said, a complete shit show.
And the positives, you know, Cunha's been a real positive. You know, only 4 goals, but he's really, I think, you know, like, looks the part. Bremo's been good, but you're going to have to get a tune out of Ugarte and Casemiro to the end of the season. You're going to have to rely on Sesko. I mean, there are narratives, as there always are with United. Manu now, you know, like, we'll see him at last. But Rashford, Hoyland, does their situation change, or are they goners? But the ultimate, you know, the defender for a defender subs were doing my head in the last month, so my head's a bit mangled with it.
I mean, I think the Oiland one, it depends on how Napoli perform, doesn't it? Because I think they're obliged to buy him if they get into the Champions League. But I think Ugarte and Casemiro and Manu between them can do a pretty good job if we play 4-2-1-3. But, I mean, if we change our style, you know, we haven't got wingers anymore. You know, I suppose Ahmed you could describe as being a winger, but you know, we've got loads of number 10s. I mean, the team essentially is going to still be as disjointed as it probably was under Amorim. And what have the club decided to do? They've gone to a couple of academy players and said, can your dad come and manage us for a few months? It's like Sunday League football. Nick's, we need a manager. Oh, my dad will do it.
Nick's his total reversal from not liking Amorim. He's always, him and Nathan have always had not even a soft spot, a massive hard spot for Fletcher. So, but it's just like, it's almost like, I don't mean to be mean, but it's like we looked at the Ollie template because we were happy, you know, like let's just do that and appease them all for a few months. I bet, before Shane, just Albert, like I said, what do you think? And he said, well, I'm pleased because he sold Garnacho. And then he said, and the next man could be exciting. Who's it going to be? And then he said, but I've also made Rubin now manager of Notts County in FIFA. And I'm going to see if we can win things at Notts County together. Come on, Rubin. Turn it around at Notts County. Shane Eller, mate.
Well, I think Albert, like, I agree with everything they said, but Albert's probably summed it up for me, because Notts County is probably the level for me.
Oh, bloody hell.
No, I think, no, I, I don't like to see a manager sacked, and I've always, I think, been consistent that managers need time, but equally, and I think, you know, me and Nick said this on a podcast, I can't remember, one of the home games, it was a peer hat, whatever game we went into after that this season, that I just didn't get the Amorim thing, if I'm honest. Like, people seem quite excited, breath of fresh air. I never saw that in him. I never heard it in what he said, and I never saw it on the pitch. And I think it was a bit naive of him. Like, I think we all agreed it needed a bit of ripping up and building for the long term, but it's naive to think you can come to Manchester United Football Club and sort of rip it up and it get worse before it gets better. You've got to kind of show some signs along the way. You've got to keep, you know, in touch with European football if you want to attract the players to build for the long term. And I think that's where he was a bit naive. This sort of, like, you've got 2 years of, you can just do whatever you want and the performances won't matter as long as you get there in the long term. It doesn't work like that. And I think he was a bit naive. So I saw nothing in him. I agree with Nick. Like, I don't think one game that early into a sort of management sort of spell should define whether you get the sack or not. But as a sort of, if we look at it as a sort of end of first term interim report, like, that final in Bilbao was absolutely shocking, to be honest with you. You know, it's a team that he knew in terms of the opposition. He had a few months with his own side, and as a one-off, you'd expect us to win that, or at least try to win it. And it looked to me as though he wasn't trying to win it, or at least he was being stubborn with Garnacho and others to prove a point. He was doing it his way or no way. And it was a bit criminal, really, because it's disrespectful for the sport. But moreover, he spited himself, because winning that, getting Champions League football, would have afforded him the players he wanted, probably. So I think that was a big alarm bell for me. So I think he needs time, but I think ultimately he was out of his depth, and it's probably the right decision, albeit it's not been made for the reasons I'm saying. As you've all said, it's been made because of a falling out, and that's a bit of an alarm bell for me, as Coggy says, that whoever comes in next, like, that's got to be really firmly transacted, because it obviously wasn't clear or yeah, mutually accepted ultimately. And it's like, what was said at the start and what was said at the end, whether it was Amorim just saying this now to force the sack because he wanted out, or whether it was a genuine misalignment of expectations. But yeah, I think that's a bit of an alarm bell for me in terms of who comes next, because, you know, if you want someone decent, they're not going to be that yes man.
No, well, that's we want a strong man, don't we? We don't want a weak manager. Yeah. That's,
yeah. So ultimately, like, as much as I thought it was out of his depth, all of this has to fall on Ineos, and you've all touched on it. But if you look at, like, three big decisions, we always judge Woodward by this. It's only fair we judge them by that. They gave Erik ten Hag a sort of knee-jerk extension on the back of an FA Cup win because of, you know, in a way, probably swayed by us and sort of supporter goodwill, if you like. But that's no way to run a football club. They should be kind of immune to that in a way. But they gave Erik ten Hag an extension and then sacked him quite soon after. Coggy mentioned Ashworth, and now they've had their first, their proper management appointment. They've got that wrong, you know, by sacking them so early. They've got to concede they've got that wrong. So where was their due diligence? I don't know if it's true, but I was just Googling earlier. Like that's probably cost us, according, you know, a ballpark figure, 40 million in payouts to people that they've hired and fired already. Yet, you know, they're cutting ticket office staff and all sorts. I know we don't want to go into that today, but you know, we're told that we have to be targeted to the low hanging fruit, to prices, etc., because that's what the price of success is. Yet, they've already
swamped. No, good point.
Like, they've swamped all of that with their decision making. So I've got no faith in them to get them to decision. But I've got, like, I think he was out of his depth, and I think they're even more out of their depth, if I'm honest with you.
At the lowest level, you know, like, we can't give you supporters' numbers and details for a ways because we made all these cuts, and the cuts are to make us more successful, and it goes round and round. No, that's a really good point. As I wish I had hope But, you know, that's long since left. I'm just going to read Barges out quickly because Peter, Steve and Ben are on audio. But this is, so Barges put, I was optimistic when Ruben arrived. His record at Sporting spoke for itself. And the timing of that 4-1 win over City, while he was still working his notice in Lisbon, only added to the sense that we might finally be heading in the right direction with the appointment. But beyond the derby win at the Etihad, the second leg against Lyon and the first leg of the semi in Bilbao, there was precious little to cling to last season. Those moments felt like exceptions rather than signs of a team taking shape, and went through everything at the Europa League, and what we got in return was one of the most lifeless, gutless performances I've ever witnessed from the United team. Spurs were there for the taking in the final and we folded. I'm convinced Ten Hag would have seen us over the line in those circumstances. He'd done exactly that just a year earlier against far stronger opposition in City. Given how much he sacrificed in the Premier League and FA Cup in pursuit of Champions League qualification and a European trophy, I don't think I was out of line saying on the way to Santander Airport after the final that he had to go. He'd gambled everything and he'd lost. To his credit, the summer transfer business gave many of us hope. Cunha and Bremo Sesko, good additions on paper. With Lammens replacing the hapless Unana and Bayinda, who wasn't much better, it felt like Amorim had been handed another chance. I backed him when he moved Rashford and Garnacho on, but his handling of Kobbie Mainoo has been the most baffling and frustrating part of his tenure. Our best academy prospect in years reduced to 5 or 10 minute cameos, all because Amorim saw him as a direct competition for Fernandes. It told me he didn't truly understand what Mainoo brings. Calling him the future of Manchester United while simultaneously sidelining him would have been easier to swallow if the results were there, but they weren't, far from it. As someone who goes home and in many ways, as Keller will allow, not fucking many, I can accept a lack of results if there's at least a sense of direction. Under Amorim, there wasn't. The football became dull, predictable and ineffective, and while the board seemed content to sleepwalk through it all, they only sprang into action once he started firing shots in their direction after Leeds. In the end, I'm relieved this chapter's over. Now it's about finding the right manager, again, someone who can restore a bit of joy, identity and belief in what we're watching every week. Up the fucking Reds, Barge 78. So that leads us on then. So, who you want and who we'll get, Nathan?
I think it's a weird one because, like, you've already mentioned the yes man in the waistcoat, but if they were to go for him, he's the sort of person that they would have already lined up ready to go, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So, being like, there would be no reason to have a caretaker until the end of the season because he's sat doing whatever he's doing. Do you know what I mean? Like, so
the mind boggles what Gareth Southgate does.
I think it was it might have been Riaz in one of our groups said, yeah, but they also backed Amorim like a few months ago. Do you know, so they could easily change their mind again, and you know, we don't know what to believe with what they say, do we? So maybe, but the fact that they said straight away that they're going to have a caretaker would suggest it's someone who's not available at the moment, or they've just not got a clue. Someone mentioned, like, you know, obviously the options, you know, like someone said Tuchel's only got his contract to England until the end of the World Cup, so he's technically available next season. Would I take that? Yes, but then, like you say, it's almost like they want a yes man, and he's definitely not a yes man. Yeah. You know, all the best managers have got a strong personality about them. I don't think there's any really, really good manager who is a yes man. So, like, you know, you're gonna, but then it's like, I think it was mentioned in in one of the groups, you know, the way that and we were saying, weren't we, like, about comparing ourselves to Chelsea, but Chelsea tend to find a way of, they'll bring a manager in, they'll win something, and then they'll sack him, and then they'll go again. And it's like, you know, I think it was you actually who said that, Barney. It was like, that's just modern football. Like, maybe that is just the way it is. And
it works for them, but whether it can work for us, you know, but they have an effort. But then again, they have the system, and then the manager just has to comply, doesn't he? He has a vast squad. This is what you have, but you do it our way.
To be fair, I'm not really, you know, about who, you know, because the other names is like Glasner, but then he's a similar sort of formation. Is he more flexible? Maybe he's sort of the middle ground. I don't know. Like, you know, you've got to, you can't look past personally, like, you know, the way that Unai Emery's doing well at Villa. Do you know what I mean? Like, but, like, I was going to say he was at Arsenal and he didn't do well there, but again, they didn't really give him a chance, and maybe they learnt from their mistake because they have given Arteta this chance this time. But so maybe he's up for stepping up again.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, you know, if they get champion, why would he leave? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, we always just assume that anyone will drop everything to come to United. But if he knows that there's something good going on there, he might not even want to do it. So other than that, I agree about the Premier League eating experience. I think because you just need. I just think you do need that, especially after the last few. I do think you need that.
The my dream one. The Ancelotti's too old now, too gone. That's too past it. But the thing with Ruben is, I don't think he got United, and he tried to install him on us rather than a Justin, and that's going to never gel out. I don't wish him well. I really hope we haven't broken him like we've broken others. I really hope he recovers and does well and gives a stick up yours. He's young enough, but he does look. He's looked that look, hasn't he? When you get so damaged by United, you look old, you look tetchy, you look. You know, you need a refresher. Go off for 6 months. Who I'd go for?
Can I just jump?
Yeah.
I think it's just quite telling that, you know, there was that video of him going for a walk this afternoon and he instantly looked 10 years younger.
But that's it. Ollie looked suddenly, you know, baby-faced again, like a year on. It's hard.
One final thing is, like, obviously, I just hope, like, obviously Ollie did really well and then, you know, we all jumped on that.
I really
want Fletcher to do well in these games, but we can't fall. You know, he could go on and, like, people have spoken about him, like, you know, Fergie spoke about how good he'll be as a manager. We can't fall into that trap again of just him having a few good games and then getting giddy.
No. And then, like, it's done at other clubs. Revert back to what you're doing, and then your chance might come again. You know, like, United, all these chances come again. The one I'm erring to with, like, cautious Glasner, I just think he could work with what we've got. I know he's had a bad couple of months, but I think that's a consequence of Europa League. Nick argues whether he'd leave. I think he knows he's leaving. He's reached a point. He's given barbs to Palace all during over Christmas. And I quite liked when Palace won the final that he got what the fan culture and he actually got what it meant to be the fans, to give them a bit of light in their dreary lives, because we go to football not to have our heads fucked with. We just, for me, and like maybe others, we go to just have a bit of joy. And for so long we've had that taken away. Last bit, new mag for City. It's been totally rewritten today by so many people, Ben included. Please support it, please. It's a good read. It's totally, totally different to the one that was going to come out. So, Helen.
I don't really know. With the manager thing, usually I think there's sometimes something that's a clear option that's out there for it. And, I mean, I think the only person who said that you get an extra manager was the Here We Go boy. And, you know, will we get a caretaker manager? I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me with this football club if we had a new permanent manager for Brighton at the weekend. So I think there's two categories, really. There's the who would you like, who would be your dream managers, and who can you realistically get? And I think your dream managers at the moment you pick for, I mean, look, Emery would be probably top of many people's lists. I think realistically he had that spell at Arsenal, as Nathan said. But that was kind of like learning on the job. You know, he made mistakes and he's come back to English football and be better again. And maybe Ruben might do that. Maybe he does come back and he comes to a Villa and does well or something like that in the future. Your other dream appointment, which would be absolutely brilliant, I know it'll never happen in a million years, but just imagine it for a minute. Jurgen Klopp, I mean, someone who gets what Man United would be all about. I mean, we were saying it back in 2013 when Fergie was leaving. I still think that he would be a really good choice for it. But realistically, in terms of who, Glasner, as you say, I know he's had a rough couple of months. I think he's got a real shot at winning a European trophy. He does want that on his CV. Maybe. Why would he come right now? I don't know. I'm not really convinced on Maresca. I've not really seen anything from him that makes me think that he would be the answer. I like the Bournemouth manager, Iraola. I think he would be someone decent. I think if you can lose your entire back four and replace it, still the competitive and encouraging. And then failing that, as I said on a podcast a few months ago, I've got a load of stick for. Maybe we do all start wearing waistcoats if you want stability, but I just couldn't see this ownership doing it if they fell out with Ashford at all. So it's going to be between like Glasner or Iraola, isn't it, really?
Ben's face for when you said Klopp. Hello, Ben.
Yeah, I'm not having that one, Nick. I think you might be in a minority there. He would have been a great appointment when he was left Dortmund the first time, but I don't think you can be Liverpool manager for however many years and then come to Old Trafford. Just on the point about Ruben looking 10 years younger, I think if I got sacked from work with a £7 million payout, I'd be walking around with a big smile on my face looking 10 years younger as well. I've got a shortlist of five. I sound like I'm actually involved in the recruitment here. And I think the standout candidate, as Nick said, for me would be Emery. I think he would tick almost every box, really. He's got the Premier League experience. He's done like one of the bigger clubs in the league, and obviously it didn't quite work out, but I think he's done an outstanding job at Villa. They are a big club. They're in a good position. They'll probably be in the Champions League next year. But I think, you know, it's time we started acting like the biggest club in the country again. You know, what would Bayern Munich do if they just got rid of a manager? They'd go and get the best of the rest, wouldn't they, from one of the other clubs in the German league. And I think he would be the standout for me. Eddie Howe I like as well. And I think he's started to sort of get a bit fractious at Newcastle, so that could be a possibility.
Nick's looking back at you like you looked at him.
I think he's done a good job there. I think, you know, I know they've dropped off a bit this season, but I do think he's done a good job there. Glasner, as a couple of people have said, I think he's done an outstanding job at Palace. I like Iraola as well. I like the way Bournemouth play, and he's got the experience now in the league for a couple of years. And then the other one that Nathan mentioned earlier was Tuchel, and I do wonder if this caretaker thing is true. And Nathan said either they've got something lined up for the summer or they haven't got a clue. You know, based on what's gone over the last couple of years, maybe the latter option is the more likely. But I just wouldn't surprise me if that was, because they did talk to him, I believe, last time. And he is only supposedly been, you know, doing the England job until after the World Cup. So I wouldn't be unhappy with that either.
But he saw his arse at Chelsea, didn't he? So it's
I think, I think, you know, like any manager is going to push back. You've got to do it from a position of strength, haven't you? That's the thing. Like you said, you know.
Yeah, he'd won the Champions League.
He wasn't getting the results to warrant. Sometimes you have to do what your bosses say, don't you, and fall in line. And other times you're in a stronger position and maybe you can fight your corner a bit more strongly. But I think to go to a point that I think you made, you know, we live in an era of instant gratification, don't we? Not just in football, but in life as well. And I think gone are the days of us, you know, we all need to accept that whoever comes in, it is likely to be short-term, particularly if they're not successful. But no one's going to get 7 years to win the league like Fergie. I mean, we've talked on this probably on these emergency podcasts in the past about giving someone, you know, 3 years.
But even no chance, years, yeah.
He's talking 18 months.
Well, he hasn't even lasted 2.5 years, has he, of his contract?
Well, he's not even lasted 18 months. 14 months,
yeah.
14 months, I think it is. So, you know, unless you are almost instantly successful, you know, whoever it is, really, you're looking at a 2-3 year turnaround, then it's on to the next person. I think we just need to accept that is the way it's going to be going forward.
Yeah, some ask then, isn't it? Some ask with all that we've got deficiencies in that squad to get hit around running. Coggy?
Yeah, I mean, just going back to Nick and Klopp, I mean, how many fucking Uggs Scousers has Nick in his spare time? That's fucking two of us now. Hug Scousers, it's a disgrace. I'm going to go a bit left field here. I'm going to go for Paul Marshall.
Right, go on.
He's currently the manager at West Bridge Holton.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I was wondering, I thought I'm such a Luddite. Where is he? Is he up and coming in the Bundesliga or something?
I've heard that the manager of West Ham being Charlton under nines is
I would have him as the assistant.
Well, now the youth academy's free now, Ben. We promoted him, so we need.
Yeah, there you go. That could be the end to coaching. Right, come on, Coggy, give us a real name.
I've got no idea.
No.
I understand where people are coming from regarding let's get somebody with Premier League experience. I fully understand that and probably agree with it. But the enormity of the task in hand and the club, it would be such a culture shock for even for Glasner, but for the likes of you know, the Bournemouth manager and and others. I just don't know. You know, and obviously, you know, we can't have somebody who's going to be too outspoken, so I think that eliminates a few. I just don't know where the manager's coming from. I wouldn't have a clue who would be the best person. I mean, I do like the idea of Eddie, because I think he's quite restrained in what he does.
Yeah, and
he likes good football and good attacking football. But I honestly don't know. I just think
he's not for me. But I will say, if we keep appointing, you know. Surely the mathematicians will go, the law of averages, one will get right. If you hire about 20 in the next 20 years, Shane, who's yours, mate?
Well, I think, yeah, just to your point there, I think you could keep rolling the dice. Don't want to be too pessimistic, but under the current ownership and the...
Yeah.
And I think Ineos is probably worse than that in some ways. I'm not very optimistic, but I think if, as the others have mentioned, I think the two obvious Premier League ones are Emery and Glasner. I'm a bit fearful of Glasner. Is he just sort of flavour of the month? But he has done a good job at Palace, in fairness. But he's very likeable. But we've said that before about managers, haven't we? So I think it probably would be him that they would go for ultimately, unless something horrific happens between now and the summer at Palace. I quite like the idea of Emery, as others have said. I think he's done he's learned the hard way at Arsenal. He's done a good job at a fairly big club in Villa, and who are sort of like the hanging on the coattails of the top two. So I think, he would probably be my choice if we're going Premier League. Like you, I've always liked Ancelotti. His sell-by date probably gone, but I don't think Tuchel would fit with the current. Like if it was Tuchel, they would have to sort of change the relationship with this director of football. I totally agree with Ben that. You know, you kind of buy yourself some credit, which he might do quicker than Amorim did, but I still think ultimately it's got to be someone, unless the club changes, they've got to work within that suit structure that's there now. So, I think it would be Glasner. It wouldn't surprise me if they appointed an interim, like Carrick was a name that comes to mind.
Yeah, but not.
Today is the interim till the summer. And if you really want a yes man, I guess there's Southgate. You could go really junior and go to McKenna or someone like that, but I think someone like McKenna would probably drown a bit in that step up. But
I think he'd want to see it through at Ipswich as well. I read the Duncan Ferguson, as they all take the piss up, but he said Ancelotti, his last spell at Everton, during a crucial moment in one of the games, he turned to Ferguson and said, "What are we having at the Chinese restaurant?" Like, maybe he was on his holidays at the end. But it's a brilliant. He just said, "So what are we having there?"
Well, you've got off that tangent there. I was just
sorry.
I've got Sky Sports on here, and it keeps looping back a footage.
Which line?
It's a picture. It's some footage of Emery in the summer, and I've only just realised he's got a tattoo on his arm. I never noticed that before, and I'm wondering, was he first tattooed Man United manager? I can't imagine Ferguson having tattoos.
I think Fergie did, didn't he?
Unless David Moyes had Wayne Mooney's face tattooed on his arse, I think Amrin might have been the first tattooed manager.
I think Fergie did. That's one for the statisticians on an odd one.
I bet Jose has a tattoo.
Oh, Jose's got a tattoo. Yeah, Jose's got a tattoo of all the trophies, is one, hasn't he? Just the ego for Nathan there. Finally, you've all given up your time for free and the podcast for free, so please support the mag. Thanks, lads, for giving up another emergency Monday night. I'm going to ask you one last question. Nick and Nathan are back on Sunday. I'm not there, but they'll be sending the last remaining mags and doing a pod. But then we're back for City properly, and hates of the week and pints clinking. My last question, just a simple, is your glass for the rest of the season half full or half empty? And I'm going to surprise you by going half full, because we'll get a bounce. A proper bounce, a better bounce. Nathan, half full or half empty?
Half empty.
Nick?
Yeah, probably just slightly half empty, I'd say. Only just.
Ben?
I really don't know. It's just halfway at this point. It could go either way.
Only not that half of a pint, though, not five, sorry. Cokie?
If I answer that, can I just say, Nathan said at the earlier on in the pod that he said he couldn't be bothered going to the Wolves game. He actually stood on Busby Way selling the magazine for 2 hours.
I know, in freezing sub...
In the freezing cold, I thought, fuck it, I can't walk.
He's such. Well, there's a nuance we'd sell after City, but the tickets had. Something had happened with the tickets, so we could only do it that we could forward. But it's the complications from that, from the app, as another diversion. You couldn't just say, sort Nathan out, because you can't do it anymore. You couldn't just sort him out. And
But the fact is, he'd rather go to the pub than to the match. Anyway, but fair play for standing in the cold and selling the mug, Nathan.
Thank you.
It was good to see you, mate. I think this team are capable of getting better results than they have playing a back four. So, if anything, I'm a bit more half full than half empty.
Shane?
Yeah, I'm half full as well. On the basis, I think at the start of the season, I said on here, like, 7 or 8 was my prediction. I think, like, we're easily good for 6th or 5th now. And I think, like, as I think Ben said, I think the league table flatters us a bit because everyone else has been really inconsistent, but that's the way it is. So I think it's there for the taking. It was a tough game, Jeff. But I think this team is capable of more better performances than it's been showing, so...
It's a poison chalice. He was trying to get to grips with it. We owe him a debt for getting rid of some of the deadwood, whatever will remain. But ultimately, it goes back, you know, to the last game that I wasn't at because of the trains. I had one eye on the darts, and that was more enjoyable. And I don't like being joyless, but that doesn't mean I'm, you know, all for next, because it could be we'd say exactly the same thing. It's sad should any United manager get 14 months. I don't know, but you've got to go with your gut, and it might well be the deflection that he's gone. What, I can't pine about it, and I'm pining about the football. So let's see. Up the fucking Reds. Take care of yourselves. United is its supporters. Thanks for all doing this, lads. I'm now going to move on to the other lads to speak. And I shall see you for City. And Nick and Nathan will see you Sunday. Take care of yourselves. And thanks for the mind support. 503,000 steps. 21,000 quid raised in 9 years. That's what really matters. Manchester United is the most important, least important thing. You taking care of yourselves, people, is what's important. All right, see you later. Thank you.
Hi, Barney. Just following up on your message on X about your podcast tonight and comments about Amrin. Nothing surprises me what happens at Old Trafford anymore. I think Amrin put himself in a position where he really left the board with no other decision to make other than to take him out of his position and release him of his duties. His time at Old Trafford, I've got mixed feelings on it. There were moments of inspiration, but when you reflect upon what what the games were like this season at home, they've been largely been disappointing and frustrating. I think the timing of his sacking is somewhat ironic, coming so quickly after Chelsea getting rid of Maresca. And part of me thinks that as Maresca has worked with Berarda and Wilcox before at City, and he's not going to cost the club anything to employ, maybe, just maybe, that he might be the man that comes into the frame over the next couple of days. Personally, I'd like to see someone coming in who's given overall running of transfers, etc. But I can't see that happening the way United is set up at the moment. Anyway, all the best, mate, and speak soon.
Steve Crabtree here. Unlike a lot of Reds, I genuinely wanted it to work out for Ruben Amorim. On the whole, he comes across as a decent bloke, and I'm totally in favour of giving a manager time to build something, to win his first trophy and to start making a challenge a few years down the line. But I think within that time, you have to see some progress. You've got to win winnable games and you've got to see small adaptations to suit the squad that you've got and some sense of how we're actually going to take the game to the opponents. But instead, we were just getting really ineffective football. This season, the system or the lack of it has cost us 18 points from really winnable matches. We got the draws with Fulham, Forest, West Ham, Bournemouth, Wolves and Leeds this season. We've limped to those draws as well. And then we lost to Brentford and we lost to Everton with 10 men. And really, those are games where we should have been favourites to take all 3 points. And we weren't. We were, you know, we should be making life uncomfortable for the opposition. But instead, it was the other way around. We were on the back foot. We were under the cosh. And it was just happening too much. I think, you know, Amorim did have, or, you know, there is a decent enough squad of players there. And if that squad of players can't function in your one and only system that Amorim wanted to play, then you've got to show what a top coach you are and do adapt, do tweak it, win those winnable games first, then, you know, mould the team, mould the squad into how you want to play when you get your new signings and you get rid of players that aren't quite good enough. And, you know, I've mentioned 18 points. We might not have taken all 18 of those points, but we should have taken a hell of a lot more than what we did against those sides. And we should have been a lot better than what we were on the pitch. For me, I think Amorim failed well before the end of last season. Also got to ask now, what does Jason Wilcox do? Why does he have such an influence at a club like Manchester United when he's not really been somebody on the world stage of football?
Hi, it's Ben here without Zayden. It's Ben here to give him my thoughts on well, what's happened this morning. Wow. Basically, I had a WhatsApp. Channel group thing with The Athletic, you know, breaking news. Something flashed up about Ruben Amorim, and then all the other Man United groups on WhatsApp that you're with, you know, with your friends and everything else, started blowing up a little bit. Nothing had come out with the club, you know, nothing had come out official with the club. And then all of a sudden, you start looking into it more and Ornstein breaks the news. Now, usually when David Ornstein breaks news, you know that it's gospel because he's about a tier one journalist, isn't he? Usually he's got it bang on the money, and he had it bang on the money long after United released a statement. So, I don't know, man. Where's it all gone wrong? Where's it all gone wrong? Yet another manager since Alex retired. Yet another manager bites the dust. Gone. You know, I keep using this saying, we're like a dog spinning around chasing its own tail. And that's what Manchester United are when it comes to managers. You know, when it comes to the cycle and the process of hiring managers, which is to be hiring managers and sacking managers. When do we give a manager a complete 3, 4, 5 years to rebuild United in their own image? And saying that, I think Ruben's not done himself any favours over the Christmas period. The results have been poor, been very, very poor, against some very poor sides as well. In the bottom half of the league, in fact, in the bottom third, 3 or 4 of the table. Substitutions far more often than not baffled. They absolutely baffle everybody. There's like, what was his obsession with always changing someone out the back line to put someone new in when there doesn't really need to be? They're not injured. Say, for example, it's Lenny Yoro, bring him off. He's had a decent-ish game, you know. You're 1-0 up or you're leading by a single goal. Bringing Yoro off to put somebody else on, for argument's sake, let's say Aiden Heaven. And the next thing you know, we all know the writing's on the wall. 5 or 10 minutes later, we go and concede a goal. And we ended up drawing the match where we should have won the match. And then likewise, we're drawing matches or we're losing matches. He never gambled. And I kept using that on previous podcasts and on my social media posts. You have to gamble. You've got to be brave as a Manchester United manager. You've got to gamble. You've got to sacrifice one of your defensive-minded players and put on an extra attacker, whether it's someone who's inexperienced or not. Ferguson done it in the past. You think of in the past with Federico Macheda against Aston Villa. That went on to help us win the league title. But you've got to sometimes gamble. I'm sorry, you've had Shay Lacy sat on the bench, you know, for how many games now, and he's only come on against Villa away. You know, there's a player there that can play out wide, that can take on a man, that can beat a man, you know, that can dribble with the ball effectively, that can, you know, isn't scared of running defenders, asking a question or two. you know, but yet then you put on another defender. It just baffles me. Yesterday, I think the writing was on the wall, but, you know, in his press conference. But I am gutted it's not worked out for him. It's a dusty, a really likeable guy. I think he's a really, really likeable guy. It'd be interesting to hear what Nick says on this, because Nick's never really bought into the Ruben Amorim philosophy, shall we say. But where do we go from here? What's the next manager going to be? Is it going to be a Glasner where it's going to be like for like? You know, maybe a bit more to it, that system. Is it going to be someone completely different? I do not know. The one person I do not want to see walk through the freaking door is Gareth Southgate. And I've got a feeling, I've got a horrible feeling, he's going to be rocking up at any time the next, you know, few days at Old Trafford and he'll be the next manager, because he's the only one that you can really probably get now. I can't see them going with Darren, with European qualification, and I cannot see them going for Darren Fletcher to the end of the season. But part of me has got this image in my head that Gareth Southgate, Mr. Waistcoat Man himself, another specialist in failure. I don't care what anybody says, he is. He got to Euro finals and he flopped both, and he flopped finals for England. He's won naff all in his coaching career, hardly. Got a horrible feeling it's going to be him. Obviously, you've got to get behind the manager, haven't you? But I'm just hoping we do our homework, you know. And it's finding someone that plays the United way. What is the United way? That's the question, isn't it? What is the United way? You know, can you play the old school United way in the new modern day of football, the way that modern systems all set up to work? I don't know. I'm not a football coach, I'm not a football manager, but you need somebody that's not scared to play positive football and let the flair players at the top end of the pitch do what they have to do. Let them use their pace, let them use their flair, let them use the power. And is there those type of players out there anymore as well? Football's moved on, you know, it's gone from I think it's coached out of a lot of people now, isn't it? You know, the flair and the bottle to entertain people. And that's what I think Manchester United manager's got to be, and a Manchester United team's got to be. Something that entertains, that gets people's backsides off seats. That, you know, you're happy and you're watching great attacking football. You're watching football played with passion, flair, you know, and a football that entertains. But I just don't know where we go from here. And obviously Barney asked me to touch on Darren Fletcher. Barney wanted me to touch upon how does he set up and play. Well, the thing is with the academy, it's hard to define a style of play, because you've got a lot of players coming in and out of your side. You don't have a settled side all the time, because obviously the players are the 21s, they may go into the first team out on loan, injuries, etc, etc. Then you lose your best part of your 18s to the 21s. And United like to play a lot of, and rightly so, a lot of players above age groups. For example, like JJ Gabriel's 15 years old, he plays under 18. Likewise, players that have been 15, 16, 17 have played for the under 21s. They do like to challenge these players. He's done all right for Darren Fletcher. He's second in the league at the minute, 3 points off Manchester City in the under-18s Premier League. Having played a hefty more amount of games, City have played 3 less games, by the way. United have played 14 games. City have played 11. So United have had a lion's share of the games already. The positive guy, Darren Fletcher, he's got some really good youngsters there. Jimmy Freites and obviously JJ Gabriel being the standout of that side. When you come to the under-18s to the first team, it's a totally different type of ocean to deal with. I wish him well, Darren Fletcher. It's going to be interesting because obviously his under-18 side played at Old Trafford not so long, just before Christmas. They beat Peterborough, a very tough Peterborough, a very good Peterborough United. They really impressed me that game. You know, the Peterborough's under-18s gave United a hell of a game at Old Trafford, but United came out 1-0 winners with JJ Gabriel into the fourth round of the FA Youth Cup. I just hope that Darren is not scared to implement his own style. I don't think he will be. I think he's very, very switched on. He's very, very, he knows the game of football, like, you know, inside out. He's a student of the game. Is what we've all been told. You know, he understands the game of football very, very well. So hopefully he sets up like a Manchester United, not scared of being a Manchester United manager. Will he set up the same way as Ruben would have set the team up? I hope not. I hope he goes and puts his own style on it, or his own stamp on it. Will he even go with some of the youngsters instead of being so defensively, having so many defensive players on the pitch? Do you then gamble and maybe bring somebody in from the youth? You know, does he does he maybe call in somebody else that's not played yet, that's not had a chance yet, or does he stick one of his own sons in? And again, I know that Jack Fletcher did a lot of stick, but you've got to give these players an opportunity, and likewise, they've got to grab the opportunity as well. I'd like to see, hopefully I'll see Darren being a bit more positive and taking a bit more risks and taking a bit more and being able to sacrifice a bit more, knowing that you need a win in situations. Gambling, that's the word I'm looking for, if he gambles a bit more. This is the problem with the youngsters is you can never win. There's always people that would want to see a youth team product put in the side, but yet they won't. Those same people will start moaning that, oh, they're not good enough, they're not this, they're not, but they won't give them the opportunity to settle down, to find a rhythm in the first team, to develop, to play first team football at the very, very highest level, as hard as it is, wanting to shoot you down straight away, which has happened. Like, we've seen it with Jack Fletcher, we've seen it with Benedito Mantato. Mantato is a great player, by the way, very, very good player, but because he didn't, you know, impose himself on it. And again, he didn't have the greatest amount of time to impose himself, I don't think. You've got to give these kids a chance to settle and a chance to build up rhythm. Not everybody can be a Marcus Rashford when he broke through and, you know, hit it straight off. You've got to give some of these kids an opportunity. But listen, we'll see how Darren Fletcher does. I wish him all the best. For me, I'm really worried. I'm going to see Gareth Southgate rocking through the doors at Old Trafford, you know, in a stupid waistcoat. And he'll be the next one through the door. Whoever it is, even if it is Southgate, we get behind him. Just disappointed about Ruben. Likeable guy, but I think the writing's been on the wall through Christmas. We can't have gone through dropping as many points as we did against the sides we did over the Christmas period. And then I think yesterday, just as I said, topped it up with what he said in the press conference. The right. I think Barney put the tweet out not long after. I thought the writing was on the wall. It needed to be nipped in the bud pretty quickly. And it seems it has done by the board that they've decided. Anyway, I'll shut up now. I'm sure we'll go on to a bit more on pod on Sunday with Nick. I believe Barney's going to be there, unfortunately. I'm going to be at Burnley away with Zayden on Wednesday night. Anyway, to the regiment, hope everybody had a great Christmas and Happy New Year to those that haven't seen any, those who I haven't seen yet, and glory, glory, Man United.